Presidential meddling. I'm Dave Anthony, Fox News. A Japanese company's attempt to buy American blocked at the White House, where Fox's Jared Halpern reports.
Making good on a promise last year to prevent Japan's Nippon Steel from taking over U.S. Steel, President Biden officially blocked the deal, writing in a statement the proposed sale poses risk to national security in the U.S. supply chain. President Biden says it is important we maintain strong American steel companies powered by American steel workers. Nippon Steel had promised to keep the name U.S. Steel and maintain a headquarters in Pittsburgh. President-elect Trump also said he would block the sale.
And now we've just learned that President Biden's going to travel to New Orleans Monday as an investigation continues into the New Year's Day terror attack when a U.S. Army veteran turned ISIS terrorist drove a truck into Bourbon Street in a crowd, murdering 14 people until police killed Shamsuddin Jabbar. He's from Texas, and Fox's Brooke Taylor talked to his brother in Houston.
On the way to New Orleans, Jabbar posted on his Facebook page saying that he was inspired by ISIS, as we know, and that at first he was going to actually target his own family and friends. So that's what I wanted to ask, you know, his own brother how it felt hearing that. And he stood back and he said it was so chilling to hear that, just shocking and heartbreaking.
There's a new law enforcement intelligence bulletin this morning. Reuters reports warning about the potential for copycats using vehicles to drive into people. A new Congress takes over in 2 hours. Republicans take control of the Senate, while in the House, a big vote looms. GOP Congressman Jim Jordan tells Fox.
Mike Johnson has worked his tail off as our speaker. I hope he gets reelected today. I think he will.
And President-elect Trump just posted on Truth Social minutes ago, good luck, Speaker Johnson, calling him a fine man of great ability, adding a win for Mike today will be a big win for the Republican Party. However, some House Republicans haven't made up their minds yet. And with the majority so slim, if one congressman joins Congressman Thomas Massey, Johnson would lose. America's listening to Fox News.
Why pay more for prescriptions? Stop overpaying and start saving with SingleCare. It's easy. Find your prescription on singlecare.com, show the coupon at the pharmacy, and start saving. SingleCare works at pharmacies nationwide and is completely free to use, whether you have insurance or not. So the next time you fill a prescription, check SingleCare to make sure you're getting the best price. Take control of your prescription costs. Go to singlecare.com or download the free app today.
Wesley Financial Group is not a law firm.
Do you find yourself stuck in a timeshare? Get the real facts about the timeshare industry and your options for cancellation. Chuck McDowell, founder of Wesley Financial Group, has put together a free information guide that reveals the secrets the timeshare industry doesn't want you to know, including the five ways to get rid of your timeshare. Call now and get this timeshare cancellation guide absolutely free.
Call 800-893-2288. 800-893-2288. 800-893-2288.
Good morning and Happy New Year from the News 11 Information Desk. I'm Scott Gross. A California man is in jail in Yuma and linked to a double homicide. 43-year-old Danny Garibay was arrested after a traffic stop. Officers say he's connected to the 2023 murders of Evangelina Ibarra and Ramon Lopez in Atwater, California.
The individual was carrying a gun with a obliterated serial number and methamphetamine.
Garibay is being held at the Yuma County Jail on a bond of $35,000. He'll be back in court today. Gyms and trainers in Yuma are helping locals achieve their 2025 weight loss and fitness goals. Research shows that 95% of New Year's resolutions are fitness-related, but by the end of January, almost 80% will have given up. Some good ways to get started on these fitness goals are by doing things you enjoy, such as walking, dancing, or working out with a buddy. I'm Scott Gross.
Friday forecast, sunny and 77, 45 on Friday night. Windy and sunny on Saturday, 73 the high. Winds can be gusty at 15 to 20 on Saturday. 50 Saturday night's low. Sunday, sunny and breezy with a high of 74.
Investment advisory services offered through CWM, LLC, and SEC Registered Investment Advisor. Welcome to Money Talk with Yuma Investment Group's Tom Rush, founder, wealth advisor, and George Davis Sr. Wealth Advisor.
Good morning, Yuma. Money Talk, AM 560 KBLU. Derek Eggerberg, branch manager of Mortgage One. Russ Clark in studio. Good morning.
I am here. Good morning.
Happy 2025. And
yeah, you got to remember to put that on everything now.
2025?
Well, when you write your checks or do it, you got to put 25 now.
Yeah.
Just so you know.
isn't it weird? Doesn't it seem like it was just not too long ago we were having this whole Y2K scare? Oh my gosh, none of the computers are going to work when we roll over to the year 2000.
Yeah, 2000.
That's a quarter of a century ago.
Yeah, yeah.
Seriously. And the irony is we're on radio still using lots of analog equipment and stuff like that.
Same equipment.
But, you know, again, isn't it interesting how we make big deals of stuff and then it's gone in a flash and you don't think of it?
Yeah, we were partying like it was 1999. And
okay, Prince. You didn't think I'd get that one either, did you?
Yeah, you did, didn't you? You're that old.
And you probably were singing that song on New Year's Eve.
I think everybody was.
So, you know, again, 2025 is here. Let's kind of kick this off and talk about some things that I think people have questions of that maybe they're scared to ask, and there's other things going on in the market. So let me ask you a question. Was last year, 2024, was it a good year or a bad year in terms of home sales, the number of home sales nationwide?
I don't think it was a peak year by any means, but it wasn't. I don't think it was bad. People are still buying. We still saw construction. We still saw stuff.
Units sold nationwide, worst year since 1995.
I'm shocked because it didn't feel like it.
Nope. 94 was slightly worse. 93 was slightly worse. But if you go do that little search, and again, I can't show anybody because we're on radio, but go look, and there's a great chart that there's a huge run-up and then a drop, a huge run-up and a drop for the last 25 years.
Okay.
But last year, number of units sold nationwide was the worst since 1995. But what you just said is construction was going like crazy, and there's people buying. But it's this population shift. And we talked about this, I don't know, 8-9 months ago, the heat map of seeing population shifting from one area of the country to another for sometimes tax reasons, sometimes political reasons, sometimes just weather reasons. But what does that mean when we were at an all-time low in terms of sales? Are people family sizes still growing?
Of course.
Are most people's incomes progressively getting slightly more?
The income's going slightly more, but they're getting behind because of inflation, so there's a little bit of a pinch.
Okay.
A lot of a pinch.
So the people who need to move up and have the ability to move up didn't last year and the year before. Why?
I don't know.
Psychologically, everybody is waiting for rates to drop.
It ain't going to happen.
And here's the problem that I keep trying to get everybody to realize. Okay, we had the lowest sales in, you know, a decade. Let's call it almost a quarter century. Well, it is more than a quarter century. Lowest sales ever. People are repeating the mantra, hey, I'm going to wait until rates drop. But when rates drop, prices go up. That's like, you know, if you were a classic car collector, would you rather have a convertible or a hard top?
Convertible.
Why?
It's more money.
Oh, so when the top goes down, the price goes up of a convertible. Every classic car collector knows that. It's the same in house prices. When the rates go down, the home prices go up. And there's just no way around that.
It's a demand shift.
So the people who are waiting, I'm not saying, look, if you can't afford it, no, don't go do it. But if you've been stalling, waiting for your family, like you're waiting for the rates to drop, go get the house now while prices are still where they are. Because when rates drop 1 to 2 points, and I can't say whether that's going to happen or not, but if rates dropped 1%, you're going to see home prices typically go up 10 to 12%.
I think some people are holding out too because we had that crash, that market crash,
yep.
And then we all remember that house prices dropped significantly, depending on the areas, sometimes half, you know, and it just fell out, and everyone got scared. They want to buy a house. I mean, the price is going down, not up. You don't want to buy into it.
And that was been oversupply in the market. That was you didn't have enough people in the market buying the homes that were being built crazily. And also, I mean, that's when you had people doing 100% financing on investment properties, and you had people on fixed income who were going in buying 2-3 homes in a couple of years. And all of a sudden, they don't have the financial wherewithal to keep these resources up and running. And so let's pretend you were a business and you had 10 restaurants in your franchise, and 6 of them make money and 4 of them are not making any money, and you run out of cash. What do you do? You probably close the 4.
Cut your losses.
What did everybody do back then during the crash? The people who didn't have the resources cut their losses. That's as simple as that crash ever was. Now, there's a lot of other financial things. Have you ever seen the movie The Big Short?
Yes.
Okay. You know, you look at some of the underlying factors that were allowing some of those things to happen, But those aren't in the marketplace right now. And yes, there's still some of the collateralized debt obligations and things like that, but you're not seeing 100% financing on investment properties. You're not going to see a real estate crash that way. We've got the lowest number of sales since 1995. This would be a great time to get out there and go buy a home, because if rates come down, let's say in 2 years, hypothetically, if you bought the home today and rates come down in 2 years, what do?
Refinance.
Cool. Do you have to refinance at the new higher value of the home, or do you get to just simply pay off what you owe and you got to keep the lower sales price, if you will?
Well, you, the value that it is will help you, so you don't mind out. You might not have to pay insurance.
So the value helps you, but it doesn't change your loan amount. So all of a sudden, you got the home when the prices are where they are, and you're assuming, or you're hoping at some point in the next couple of years, rates come down. Now, let's talk about rates. What has the Fed done since September? Because everybody goes, oh my gosh, the Fed did X and rates are going to do Y. What's the Fed done since September? Do you know?
Raise rates.
Since September, no.
Cut rates.
They've cut rates.
I know.
100 basis points.
Yep.
Now, 100 basis points is basically 1 point in cost. It's, you know, again, if rates were at 5, they would be down at 4. What has happened to the mortgage market in that exact same period of time? 100 basis points of cost into the market.
Okay.
So the Fed cut by 100, but what that did to the mortgage market is you as a borrower have 1% more in cost because bonds went the other way. And everybody always assumes, oh my gosh, the Fed's going to cut rates. Mortgage rates are going down. No, no. The Fed simply controls big commercial banks' ability to borrow money. So if you are, let's say, you know, let's use a company that doesn't exist anymore, Lehman Brothers. Let's say Lehman Brothers needed to go borrow $100 million somewhere. If the Fed cut rates 100 basis points, that means Lehman Brothers got to borrow money at 1% less. Now, do they have to pass it along to you?
No.
No. That just means operations. It's easier for them to profit in big, big, huge corporate America. Now, sometimes it trickles down, but it is not what drives mortgage rates. Fed dropped 100 basis points. Everybody celebrates. Has your credit card interest rate gone down?
No.
No. Have auto rates gone down?
Uh-uh.
Nope. Mortgage rates are up 100 basis points.
Yeah.
So to the consumer, please don't wait for the Fed to drop rates, because the Fed doesn't control mortgage rates. And that's the next thing that I would love people to see is there is a – the media tries to make it that it's a one-for-one. No, no. Those two things are completely disconnected. Sometimes they work in tandem, but there is no connectivity that way that says when they do this, this happens universally 100% of the time. Now, if the market's crashing, let's say the economy is tanking and the Fed is dropping rates quickly because let's say the stock market and everything else is crashing, what is that signal to investors to do? Move their money out of stocks.
They're getting out quick.
And you go put it into bonds. So if everything is crashing horribly and you see the Fed dropping rates to encourage still things to be invested in and reduce inflation, is that giant wave of money flows into bonds. Now rates come down because you need less lower interest rate to attract money in, is the way you and I would psychologically see it. That's not what happens, but that's what the perception is. So all of a sudden, it feels like the Fed dropped rates. And that's why mortgage rates came down. But now you're hoping for a huge economic crash, which I don't want. So don't expect the Fed cut to drop mortgage rates. What could drop mortgage rates, in your opinion, as a consumer?
I know it's not competition. I mean, the money costs the money. I mean, that's it. You know, it gets controlled through the banks. But
when you see the run-up in the stock market slow, I mean, have we had a really good run in the stock market?
Yeah.
Okay. When you see that start to slow and you see some of the big money managers and the technical signals saying, hey, we might be flat, as you see them pulling some money off and they start to put it in a safety net, if you will, as that money flows into bonds, now you'll see rates come down. But if you could get 15, 20% in the stock market, and no, that's not what you get, but just use that number. If you could get 15 or 20% in the run-up in the market, would you go take your money out and invest it in a 4 or 5% bond?
Sure.
No, you wouldn't.
No.
You are such the contrarian. But well,
but some people want security.
Sure.
You know, and you'd look at that 20% and say, well, that can't last. It's on its way down. And they would go to bonds. Mm-hmm. There's some people that would.
And as you see that, that's what would drive rates downwards for you and I.
Yeah.
But in the meantime, that's not going to happen. So don't expect rates to come down at least first, second quarter of 2025. You know, depending on what happens with the new administration, depending on what we really do quickly,
we need to pay attention because things are going to move. Mm-hmm. We just don't know in which direction.
Correct. So now let's talk about a couple of programs that I'm starting to see grow. Do you know what a home equity investment loan is?
I'm assuming that's where you can borrow, use the home as collateral, and just get a loan on your collateral to do.
You're right. You're saying it all correctly, but people know what a line of credit is, a HELOC,
yeah.
A home equity line of credit, meaning it's a checkbook. You're paying interest. Interest only, you're turning around and you have potentially a payoff at some point. There's a home equity loan, which is a fixed loan. It's not interest only. It's just like your first. Let's say you borrow 50 grand and it's amortized over 20 years and you make principal and interest payments. And at the end of 20 years, it's paid off. A home equity investment is one of the big rages I'm seeing online. And for a very select few, like a reverse mortgage, they can work really, really well. But for a lot of people, maybe not so much. So a home equity investment loan is you go to a investor, big company, and they're going to say, all right, Russ, your home is worth, let's say, 200 grand, but you owe 100. So you've got $100,000 equity. You want to borrow 50 grand, right?
Okay.
They write you a check for $50,000 with the marketing that says you're not going to make any payments. You don't pay any interest. You got the money.
Oh, I'm
now,
scared.
Here's the asterisk is they literally just bought what percent of your home, if it's worth 200 grand and they gave you
25%.
50. Cool. They now share 25% of the equity in the run-up of your home until you sell the home.
Oh, so if the home doubles in value, then you owe them $100,000.
Correct.
Okay. I'm not happy.
Well, but so
it's a gamble.
So it's a gamble, but here's the thing. What do typically home prices do?
They go up over time, typically.
Cool. So if you bought a home, let's say 10 years ago, and now it's doubled in value mm-hmm. in 10 years, that $50,000 is you're going to repay $100,000. And so the negotiation part of it is not interest rates, but typically they're quote unquote buying the appreciation rate in the percentage of the amount that they lent you. So in your case, if they lent you 50 grand on a $200,000 home, they now have contractually obligated you to pay all of their money back plus 25% of the appreciation at the time that you paid them off, period. So let's pretend somebody, you know, let's say mom and dad bought a home. Well, your parents back in Florida, what'd they pay the home for?
I think it's like $60,000 or something.
And it sold for how much?
Like $460.
Okay, so let's pretend that they owed 60 grand on it and the home was worth 200, right? And they borrowed an extra 50, so they borrowed, you know, realistically 20, 25% of that. And you sold it for $500,000 later.
Yeah, that they owe them. They owe them 25% of that. Half a million.
That's another $125,000 potentially. And so, again, it's not that it's a bad product, but man, just read all the fine print and know what you're doing. Because when somebody says, oh, you don't pay any interest and you don't pay any principal payments, they're going to get their money back somewhere.
And what is the date that falls due when you do something like that? The day you sell or the day that?
It is the day you sell, the day you can refinance and pay them off at any time.
Yeah.
You can sell at any time, but it does come due. Most of them are 30 years. You can back it down less than that. But most of them, at the end of 30 years, you have to pay them off, not unlike a 30-year mortgage. So let's say your mom and dad had the home for 15 years. They needed some cash. They go into it. In 30 years, they're going to have to pay that off through sale or through refinance or something. Period. Now, again, for a select few people, that's great, and that's not a big deal. But if you think you're getting the money for free, you're not getting the money for free.
So let's say that I had a house that's worth 200, and I owed 100, and they could talk them into loaning me 100.
They, in essence, bought 50% of your house.
Right. And I could take that 100 and pay off and have zero payments zero interest to anybody. And then I know the day I sell it, I give them half. Some people may look at that as a great lifestyle. I could have zero. My mortgage is literally paid off at this point, but somebody else owns half of it when I sell, half the equity when I sell.
100% agree. However, here's the however. Psychologically, what do most people do? Their family, budgets, their family budgets rise to the level of the income and the debt flow. So I agree. To the disciplined person, you're exactly hitting the nail on the head to the person who could do well with this. You use the money to get rid of all other debts, maybe the house payment, but maybe not. But get rid of all other debts, live conservatively, start investing money, you know, go see Tom and Adrian and start putting money in the bank, whatever it is. But don't use it as the, hey, I just got rid of all of my debt. Now I can go buy that brand new Lamborghini, or I'm going to go get that 95-inch big screen TV.
I got more leverage.
Yeah, no. So, but it is interesting that the three people in the last month that have called me on this are what style of people?
They want to buy something versus be conservative?
No, they've already exceeded what they're comfortable with their budgets. They're trying to get out of debt. And, you know, two of them specifically, well, if I don't make payments on any of this stuff and I do this, then I'll be debt-free later. No, you won't, because you haven't changed your financial budget. If you stop going out and putting things on credit cards three times a day and you convince yourself you don't need the brand new car, so maybe.
What do you think they did after they hung up on you?
No, these were all three office visits, which I'm happy to do. But
most people don't want to hear that. They want to hear, I continue my lifestyle and I do it with
here's where the rubber meets the road is for the one gentleman. You know, he's talking about what do we need to do in terms of financing these types of things, and is this the good program? And we had a great conversation. We probably sat there for an hour, and what we're going to end up doing is refinance the first, do a cash out, and we're going to pay off all of the other debts and come up with money to fix the house, new roof and new stuff. So what he's going to owe on the house is going to be just as much as it would have been that other way. But total debt obligations per month go down by almost $700 a month. And now, here's the asterisk. That's paying off the house, the car, the credit cards, the other things, pulling out about $15,000 to put a new roof on the house, so maintenance to the home. And it's all done on a cash out refinance. So if interest rates over the next 2 years go down, what are we going to do?
Refinance.
Cool. And then now it's just a straight, simple rate and term refinance. We're not pulling money out again. We don't have to jump through some of the qualification hoops. But that payment, we can make it cheaper over time if interest rates go down, if the market does what I think it's going to do. And now that $700 could turn into $900.
But what are they going to do with that extra $8,500 a year? You know,
we talked about that. He's going to turn. We did. And so that becomes A, the cushion that you don't need to put any money on your credit card. And B, if it was me, I take half and send it to my financial investor and I keep the other half to make sure.
Are they going to renegotiate their budgets on other items that have cost them to get into debt?
I don't think so anymore. I think the rest of it's pretty fixed.
It was pretty good.
So again, I don't mind these programs because some of them, and again, there's a select few people it could work for, but most of them are, look, just have the wherewithal to come have a conversation, whether it's with me or somebody you trust. Make sure that you're doing the right decision for the long term, because this gentleman, he's going to put it on a 30-year fixed, and I know rates will come down over the next 4 or 5 years, but probably quicker. No matter what, as he keeps paying down on the mortgage, is his equity building in the house.
Yeah.
Cool. And as you pay down the principal, so too the interest goes down. He'll have more equity. He'll have less debt. He'll only have a house payment. And at some point, he'll be able to retire and have everything else done and zeroed out.
Right.
Simple. But we do advertising things, and you study marketing and psychology. How many commercials are out there trying to do the very best program for an individual versus convince them here's a sales piece?
They'll just do sales.
Okay.
Most everything is about.
So here's the
buy now. This, I mean, people that advertise market, they want instant
gratification.
Something, you know, I want to sell something right then. I don't want to just get a program.
two loans that are the most expensive for a consumer on the market. That's number one, a home equity investment loan. The fees to the initial lender are between 3% and 5% on top. Mm. Now, if you sat down with a mortgage advisor and they charged you 5 points to work with them, would you like that?
No.
No. But you never see it because those things are all built into that loan for that thing.
Okay.
Second most expensive one, which actually is, again, a good option and for a lot of people is a better option than the one we just talked about, is a reverse mortgage. Mm-hmm. Now, reverse mortgages, you have to be over a certain age. You have to have equity in your home. But for a lot of people, if you're not concerned with leaving the property or anything to your estate, your heirs, what do you care whether it's free and clear or leveraged to the hilt when you die?
You don't.
Okay. So that's the person who either they or the person who just can't financially make it any other way, and they're going to use their home as the checkbook to basically fund the rest of their life. And there's a lot of people that didn't invest well enough over the course of their working career for one reason or another that have to do a reverse mortgage. So there's a great option for people. However, you've heard me say this. What is my only aversion to those?
I don't remember. I mean, I don't like them in that, you know, you could do the same thing and, you know, borrow money or something, have another mortgage or whatever. But once you do the reverse mortgage, if you have a car accident the next day, that house is gone, is it not?
No. That's the safer thing because, again, as long as you're living in it as the retiree, you're there
forever.
Doesn't matter. But the downfall is when you and I do a forward mortgage, a traditional 30-year fixed, you're paying principal and interest each and every month. So the balance goes down. You're paying interest on less and less and less. Right. It never compounds on itself. What's the beauty of investing in the stock market? Your investment should compound itself.
Yeah.
Cool. So the problem is with a reverse mortgage, if you're not making payments, that means the interest that goes in is starting to compound on itself. So hypothetically, if you bought a $100,000 home and did a normal mortgage, at the end of year one, what do you think you owe instead of $100,000?
Like 99, 50.
Right.
Yeah.
Probably 99. At the end of year two, it's probably 97. At the end of year three, it's probably 95, and it's slowly going down. Now, let's say today you did a $100,000 loan on a reverse, and interest rates were, please, let's use 5% so it's fairly even in my head. That means at the end of year one, you owe $105,000. Okay. But now at the end of year two, you take 5% interest on that. So now it's not $5,000, it's $5,025. So at the end of year two, you now owe $110,025.
Okay.
At the end of year three, now you're pushing 115 and change. At the end of year, you know, you can see how if you graft this out, it starts compounding on itself.
Well, because interest becomes debt that they put the debt down on paper, and that's part of the loan.
So to the retiree who says, oh my gosh, I'm just going to do a reverse and I'm not going to make payments anymore, why are you doing that? If you can't afford it any other way, great. But maybe talk about, is this the home you want to live in forever? You could sell it too, but living there with a reverse mortgage is not a bad option. No, to your point, if you got in an accident, you're not going to lose the house. However, are taxes and insurance included in a reverse mortgage non-payment?
No idea.
Nope, they're not.
Okay.
So you still are obligated to pay your taxes and your insurance.
Makes sense.
Every year. Now, if you let's say, live there until you are deceased and nobody else is on the loan with you that way, then the estate has one of three options, which is sell the home, the debt's paid off, and the estate keeps whatever is left. Number two, you can let it go to foreclosure, and the bank then is obligated to go through the foreclosure process to foreclose it from the estate, take back what's theirs, and then if there is any overage, it still goes back to the estate. If there's any shortage, can't really come back after anybody because you're deceased and the home is the collateral. Or number three, you can have the estate refinance it. So let's say if you did one, your daughter could certainly come in and go, hey, estate, I'm going to refinance the home. I want to take it over. And she goes to the bank and gets a loan for it and takes it. So you don't lose anything. You could win. Let's say you lived to be George Burns' age and you were drinking scotch and smoking cigars until 100
plus.
That's
what does it.
Yeah. If you did that and the mortality tables say we're basing this off you kicking off at 85, you might live there a good long time, and Wall Street basically takes it in the shorts.
Yeah.
And if there's a shortfall, you can outlive the mortgage. If you sold it and or you deceased early, no, the bank doesn't get to keep anything over what is owed to them.
Okay.
The rest goes to the estate.
Oh.
Now, that probably a little bit better than that home equity investment loan, because you don't ever have to leave your home. You don't ever have to do anything else. With that home equity investment loan, what do you have to do? At the end of 30 years, you either have to refinance it or you have to sell it contractually. They're getting their money back at the end of the 30 years on or before with no prepayment penalty. So, you know, let's pretend somebody who's 50, who's looking at this, and they did one of those home equity investment loans. At age 80, you got to make a decision. Now, at age 80, is your income typically up or down from when you were working at age?
Down.
Down. Okay, yeah. So you may or may not be able to qualify to refinance how much is owed, because in 30 years, if that bank gave you 50 grand in 30 years, what do you think is owed?
I don't know.
200 maybe? It depends on what your equity up. Yeah. But let's say you now owe them 200, 250. And let's say the interest rates were at a bad cycle in history. You may not even qualify to refinance that thing in 30 years. That's playing with a loaded gun. I don't want to play Russian roulette with something that I can't control.
Then the house gets sold.
Yep. Yep. And then you're living wherever else.
But moving in with the kids.
Is that what you're going to do? Is that your retirement plan?
That's my whole plan.
Okay. Well, now that we've aired that your New Year's resolution is you're moving in with your kids.
That's right.
Let's take a break here. This is Money Talk AM560 KBLU.
Because the flag still stands for freedom, and they can't take that away. And I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know.
Given recent events in the financial markets, doesn't a second opinion make sense for your financial well-being? If you've been questioning your investment plan that you have in place, Yuma Investment Group Wealth Management would like to help by offering a free, no-obligation consultation to review your financial affairs. Yuma Investment Group Wealth Management. Investment advisory services offered through CWM LLC, an SEC-registered investment advisor. Carson Partners, a division of CWM LLC, is a nationwide partnership of advisors. To enjoy a longer, productive retirement, you need an investment portfolio that continues to work for you. Yuma Investment Group Wealth Management specializes in solid financial advice. Whether you require low volatility, liquid assets, or longer-term investments for higher returns, it's important to discuss your options with a financial advisor. Schedule a consultation with Yuma Investment Group Wealth Management today. Investment advisory services offered through CWM LLC, an SEC-registered investment advisor. Carson Partners, a division of CWM LLC, is a nationwide partnership of advisors.
Hey, Yuma Money Talk, AM560 KBLU. Derek Eggeberg, branch manager with Mortgage One, and Russ Clark in studio. Good morning.
Because I have nowhere else to go.
Yeah, we've said that on and off air for years, and that's like not really a question, is it? So do you have any, and I hate the word New Year's resolutions because that's so, but I would use a different terminology.
There's some new direction and some things I want to get accomplished in the year 2025 that I'm diving into early. Okay. There's some restructuring going on during my day job, and, you know, we're going to restructure. I mean, we're just, we do a nice job, but it's not. It's limited in its growth because of the way the management's set up. So we're redoing all of that. I have I usually don't do New Year's resolutions, but I want to be more spiritual and more physically active than I already am. And so I'm doing fasting, you know, a more of a spiritual fasting as well as, you know, for to accomplish all of that. But it's kind of new things in my life that I'm really being active with. You know, a lot of times you get to be my age and you start becoming inactive, and you're not pushing new items. You're not growing.
Yeah,
you're more like, well, I used to do things, you know, and I'm getting out more. Helen and I both want to be more socially active.
At your age, you know what inactive at your age is called?
I don't know what they call that.
Dirt.
Dirt. The dirt nap.
Okay, so you want to be more active.
Yeah.
How am I measuring any of this? Tell me what your top one, two, three things are and how we're actually measuring.
What is the restructure of the business? I think we can double the size of the business. I think we can do that. And that's... double, you know, the sales in the business. Clean
your
it up.
Parking
make it
lot
look,
is always full. Well, How are you going to double the amount of cars?
That's
to
number
work?
One on it. Is that completely gone? Those cars are not necessarily active cars, and we need to get them off the lot. In other words, somebody put it there and say, "Well, I want to get this done. I can't afford it now. Let me just leave it there for a year until I can afford it or something." You know, and that needs to all go away.
Okay,
it needs to all go away and all that. So. That's the appearance is going to be a big thing right up front.
Okay.
On that.
So doubling sales.
Yeah.
What else?
Better employee incentives and things. We want to not only grow, but be able to include the employees in that. And, you know, with other incentives, vacation pays and 401ks and other things that go along with that
okay,
that we
so
want to.
So carrying your team forward financially.
Correct.
I like it.
Right.
Next.
That's the main thrust of it, but it's internal organization as far as tracking, you know, paperwork-wise, defects, returns, making sure that everything financially is accounted for, and checks and balances. And it's pretty good right now, but there's holes.
Here's my challenge to my team, and we'll talk about the same things. We all make New Year's resolutions. I've got a great list of things that I'm going to get done this year.
Yeah.
Now, is the once the passion is gone, once the emotional, oh my gosh, we're going to do this, is gone, is the sheer will there still to do it?
No.
And
that's why there needs to be some other apparatus set up, and that apparatus is now an increase of meetings with me and some others to check to progress reports and put some time tracking, activity tracking and in place for open discussion, and that open discussion needs to happen on scheduled basis every month, every week, every month.
Okay.
And that will be progress in productivity, and in my business, that productivity is easy to track in that billable hours. I mean, you work 40 hours this week. How many billables did you get? That's a pretty simple basic to start with. So if somebody works 40 hours, you would hope that they could get 40 hours billable, which is very possible in my industry. We don't reach those, and for a myriad of reasons, we don't reach those. And those are the things that we will talk about on a continuous basis on cleaning up those reasons that we don't reach those.
So leading indicators and lagging indicators. So if you're saying billable hours versus how many were you on the clock, my question as a outside guy looking in, did you have enough vehicles in the lot to keep them busy and they weren't efficient enough? Because you guys work on a schedule of hours.
Yeah, it's efficiency.
Okay, so you've got enough customers, just not the efficiency.
Correct.
And then there's other companies that may not have enough customers, and their people are so efficient, they're getting it out, and then they're sitting waiting.
We don't have the efficiency.
Okay.
You know, according to the book, and the books, I think, are pretty fair, if they say in the book it takes 10 hours to do a job, it's usually done in a fair manner to where, a skilled mechanic can get that done in 10 hours if they have the right parts available.
So if
things are laid out, if things are in front of them, like if you're putting brakes and rotors on a car, you can get it done as long as you have the brakes and rotors sitting there in front of you. And there's ways to get that done, too, in that sometimes there's a complication of not having the brakes available, and they won't be in for 5 hours, or they won't be in for a day, and that car's taking up slots. It's already in the air, the brakes are already off, and you you can't use that machine. You can't use that lift at that point. And or it may just be that, you know, they thought they had the brakes. They didn't. They're going to be here in an hour. Well, what do you do for an hour? And that is how we make use of that time. And that would be maybe investing in more lifts to where you've got two cars on the air and you're back and forth.
Let's go. Hurry up.
Yeah, exactly.
When are you going to do that?
Exactly. Well, that's already in process.
So New Year's resolution, you have something that A, is tangible. B, you're already thinking of ways to make it come to fruition. But C, you're going to put in some metrics where you can measure it, whether it's sustainable.
It has to be. It has to be. And that's the sustainability. Is you put something in place that is going to be a conversation that you map out for the whole year so that we're going to check this for the whole year.
So if you turn that back around, you know, one of ours is if we've got a not unlike you, we've got a growth model that we need to do for our office. The only thing that I can control is what? How many calls and people I see and talk to?
Well, yeah, your time.
And so,
and efficiency on that is important.
There's the efficiency perspective, and there's literally just the number of contacts. And it's so funny. You hear a lot of people in our industry go, oh, my gosh, you know, I'm so busy. I don't have time to do X. Well, show me what you're doing during the day. And it's like you're there for 8 to 10 hours. And some of these people fake that, oh, my gosh, I'm so busy for 8 hours.
Right.
You're working on one loan. Really, you're not working 8 hours on a loan.
Right. And you're waiting on a call from somebody to get a piece of paper.
And don't wait. Pick up the phone and call and pick up the phone and go schedule a lunch, a coffee, or something. Right. But it's also tracking how efficient are we on helping our people. So the number one goal I have for my group, my team, is we're going to have 100 referrals outbound, not inbound, outbound. Now, what I just said to you, and you're giving me this inquisitive look.
I don't understand what that means.
So let's say you, Russ, said, hey, go, you need to talk to Tom Jones. Tom, call Derek. That's an introduction. That would be a referral to me.
Okay.
So, yes, do I want referrals coming in? Absolutely. Yeah. But if I have 100 outbound referrals, let's say, use that same example. If Tom is working with me and we've got him under financing and he's going to go work on a, you know, he's buying a home, but it needs some electrical work, I can introduce him to my electrician or my flooring guy or my plumber or a real estate agent or a title company. Literally, we should be able to refer 4 to 5 people every time we're working with somebody somewhere, and we'd rather introduce them to the people we trust and that we use personally for our own stuff. And so our number one metric is, are we referring 100 people outbound each and every month to people we trust? Why? Because let's pretend I had 5 people who needed auto repair. And I was always like, hey, Russ, you got to talk to this guy. Hey, Russ, I'm sending this guy over. They need you to fix X, Y, Z. Do I then become more important to you if I'm? Okay, that's it. So
simple.
You build the relationship by helping other people first. It's not, we don't need to do more business. I would like to do more business. But thankfully, based on our community and referral partners and support, we don't need to do more business, so we don't need to be slimy and salesy. Guys, let's just help other people.
Right.
Which is what you're talking about, bringing your team along financially.
Right.
Hey, team, here's my New Year's resolution. Every one of you sitting in this office, you're buying a rental property this year, and we're going to start building your financial
work. But there's a price for that, too, and that's something that I've already talked to them about. That, look, I expect more. There's expectations. I want you to make as much money as you can handle. I don't care. There's no cap because it's a lot of it's, you know, they get a percentage of jobs.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. I don't care if you make triple what you're making now. But the place has got to be clean. It's got to be done. No comebacks and all that kind of thing. Cause
don't forget to put the lug nuts on the tires.
Yeah. You pay for that too, because you have to redo. I don't care how much it is, but I want feedback from them on a constant basis on improvement, improvement, improvement. Mm-hmm. And those improvements are aesthetics to, you know, how I can get turning wrenches faster in the morning. Now, at 8 o'clock when the bell rings, and we don't really have a bell.
It's like a school bell?
No, we don't have one.
It's like schoolhouse rock over here.
8 o'clock, do you have a wrench in your hand? Or are you spending an hour getting the doors open and the cars moved and getting the trash out and all that? And if you're spending a whole hour, you're too valuable to me, you know, and that's what I want. I want that kind of input regularly to where I'm helping you bill more, because I want you to do well. And if they're doing well, they're a happier employee, they're doing better jobs, and they're busy, and I want them busy. I want the, and it's not how many cars I take in, it's how many I get out every day that I matter. It matters to me.
Well, and exactly what you're saying from an investment perspective, and this is why, again, like minds hang around with like people. Look, if you guys are setting up, when I say you guys, anybody listening, if you're setting up New Year's resolutions or goals, put together an accountability group. Just talk about those things with people who can hold you accountable, because you all know I'm going to actually ask Russ about his metrics and his efficiency model in the next quarter.
That's fine.
Guaranteed. I want you to ask me things. But one of the things, and I love technology. I'm really good with technology, but I love certain things. Certain things make us stupid. So over the last couple of years, what has almost everybody done with their phone systems?
Got rid of them.
It's automated. There's a auto attendant. You know, you call up the airlines and press this, press this, press this, and it takes you 27 pushes to connect to a human being. Told everybody about 3 months ago. No. January 6th, we're hiring a receptionist. We'll have a new one coming in that Monday. We're putting somebody up front to greet people, to make sure the coffee's on, to make sure the photocopiers are filled, and to make sure we have a live body answering the phone on the first ring. Why? Because you all are way too important and valuable to be doing photocopier and coffee and answer a phone. And it's also stupid to have people calling in and seeing an automated system that it makes them feel not personal. I want a warm welcome voice saying, here we are. And what did everybody say? Well, geez, Derek, we're moving companies and, you know, we've got all these monies going out. Can we afford to hire a receptionist? And I asked the opposite question. Can we afford not to?
Right.
No. You guys all get paid more than a receptionist. And right now, yes, you're helping keep the office clean. Yes, you're filling the photocopiers. Yes, you're making the pots of coffee. Yes, when somebody walks in the door, you get up out from behind your desk and walk to the front to greet them, which then takes, what, 30 seconds, 45 seconds? But that means the customer had that doubt of, is there anybody here? No, we're not doing that anymore. It's more important for me to pay for the receptionist. So you guys, efficiency like you're talking about, but can
keep,
work.
Keeping her busy, or him, whoever it is. The funny thing about reception, you know, and I used to study business a lot until I got lazy in those last 5 years. But
last 5 years?
Okay, 10. but you know, I was reading something on, you know, they did actual surveys on greeting, on how to greet people and how to do something. Like a reception picks up the phone and says, can I help you? What are you looking for? And I want to sell a house or, you know, whatever. And they say, well, hold on, I'll get you somebody. You know, that's a normal thing for receptionists. These people, and I don't know if it's MIT that changed it, they actually started selling with the receptionist. They says, well, I'm glad you called. I have Derek available. He's been in the business 20 years. He's been the best and noted because of these awards. If anybody can sell a house, he's the right guy. Hold on a second. Let me get him on the phone for you. That credentialing makes a sales difference of like 15 to 20% closing. Not that you just got the call, but they've set it up. And even if you're paying the person to say it, it doesn't matter.
Which everybody is. That's called advertising.
Right. You need somebody that knows the truth, going to tell the truth. You know, you're an integrity guy anyway and honest and all that. But telling the truth. But to get that information into that person's head is a huge plus. Because a lot of them are calling cold and they don't know who you are. They don't know the business. They don't know. They just want to sell a house. Right. They say, yeah, I got Joe the salesman. Here, hold on. That's a negative.
Which is, go back to psychology selling, that's the triangle for trust. It never needs to be, I'm bragging about myself. Somebody else needs to.
It doesn't work to do it yourself. You have to have a third party.
And go ahead.
You have to. But if you could get a receptionist to understand that and know everybody in that building on the...
Oh, they will.
And the strengths and who they are and what they are, so they can tell somebody on the phone and credential them.
Go back to my number one measurable metric. What did I say the office is going to do?
Be more efficient.
No, I did not.
Yeah, you did.
I said 100 outbound referrals.
Oh, outbound. Yeah,
come on, Russ.
But then we talked efficiency.
But out of that, the staff has already been taught the same thing that I do, the triangle for trust. So if I said, hey, I need you to do, let's say they called and said, you know what? We need a new roof. Cool. Who would I, and you know who I would use, but who would I use on my roof?
I have no idea.
Come on, Lundgren. Jonathan Lyons.
Yeah, I know.
So I would say, hey, I need you to call Jonathan.
I had to say that just in case it wasn't true.
Oh, come on.
Yeah, it was true.
You know, I would say, hey, you know, Jonathan Lyons, A, he's a good friend of mine. B, he's done stuff at my own personal house and some of my rentals. And I need you to talk to him, and he'll take really good care of you, and he'll be honest.
A trust that's going to be taken care of.
And that's from sales perspective.
You don't want to refer somebody and have them be a terrible.
No, I wouldn't want to do that because I'm not going to stake my reputation. And that's the whole beauty behind it is, gang, the number one thing I'm measuring everybody on is 100 outbound referrals with, now that we've established this, with trust and credibility and authority and a little bit of personal knowledge. So can I validate Jonathan Lyons' work?
Yep.
100%.
Yep.
Can I validate my plumber, my electrician, my flooring guys?
I would assume it's your business. You have to be able
to. All of that stuff. So when I refer out, I have no problem. Oh, gift baskets and stuff. You know what? Yeah, you've seen me use Donna George at the Peanut Patch for near on 15 years. Absolutely. She and her husband take great care of you. They can design baskets. I absolutely love using her because of what she's done for me. Now, do I want my customer then to go online and go find one of those Harry and David gift boxes or any of those other ones? No, go use Donna and put something together. But I'm willing to stake my reputation because I know the quality of work they do.
You'll be taken care of.
And that's back to what you were saying with the receptionist. That's why we're putting a receptionist in is I'm thankfully now that the bigger corporate America stuff is done, I don't have to be beholden to a phone tree system. I don't have to use that stuff.
But you need to train a receptionist. You know, there's so many bad ones in town. I'll say that. They're bad ones. Mm-hmm. You know, they know how to answer the phone. They go, yeah. Or they just tell the name of the company like they don't care about it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you got lines and lines. What do you want? You know.
Yeah, no, it needs to be, thank you for calling Mortgage One. This is Derek. How may I help you?
Or whatever. And but just don't make it sound like it's the guy at McDonald's says, you want fries with that?
Or it's, yeah. But that's my problem with these whole phone tree things is everything sounds so yuck.
Oh, so I'm saying something that's killing me to say it. I don't want to. Or they say it so fast you didn't understand it.
And I go back to when the phone tree things, the automated stuff was fun and funny. Do you remember, and this had to be, we're going to go old school here. Like 94 and 95, I was doing probably 10 flights a week nationwide. I mean, I was all over the place. And Southwest Airlines was my jam. That's who I was flying with almost exclusively based on where I was going and just cost and ease of use and stuff like that. Their phone tree would say, you know, for this, press one, for this, press two. And now you're in hold waiting for.
Oh.
And it would come on and say, if you feel this time is too long, press five. You press five. It says, if you pressed five, just know it's not going to do anything, but hopefully it made you feel good.
Did so
if you
really?
If you want to keep pressing five.
I don't remember that.
Oh, it was hysterical just to listen to those things that they were having fun with it, just trying to be a little bit humorous to their customers. Now everybody's gotten to the point that, you know what, let's skinny up operations and let's just try to automate as much of the stuff as we can. Now there's no fun. There's no humor. There's no nothing. I mean, and so that was cool when it was new. Now that everybody's done it to cut out the receptionists, let's go back and have a physical body answering the phone and get rid of some of that stuff that just.
You just got to have the right one. And that's not an easy.
Do you
fill.
Want to apply?
No.
Okay.
I'd be terrible. But no.
Thank you for admitting that because we thought the same thing. You have the personality for radio, for reception.
But you need to sell it all the time. But you need to sell it. Not like you're a salesman, but like you like the people and you're happy to be able to help them.
Happy to have a job, happy to be in an environment where people are supportive, happy to be doing things that are not slimy and evil. No, this industry is a great industry. I actually have them starting Monday, so we already know who it is.
I'm going to come in and check them out.
You really should. and you can say, Derek, you screwed up, or Derek, you picked a good one.
Yeah.
But that's, again, kind of the forward thinking. What's the New Year's resolution? More customer focused, more outbound referrals being more important to other people. We don't need to be as important ourselves. And how do we grow the team? So I want this receptionist in the next 6 months to move up the food chain and become more in the office and put a new receptionist in. I want my team like you want your mechanics. make more money, grow. Let's go. This is not a static industry.
No.
And the New Year's resolutions are, guys, we have to measure all this stuff. So do you have a health New Year's resolution other than moving?
For myself personally?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So is it a weight? Is it a workout? Is it what is it?
And I've focused for the last year on it, and now there's a reassessment. In fact, I get a reassessment today on where I am, and I'm greatly improved in a lot of areas. But I know I want to lose another 25 pounds.
Okay.
And I know I want to gain more muscle in some areas where I had some injuries and I'm having some time with, but we're working on that. And then, you know, I want to attend, Helen and I both want to do more with getting out to be more social, meet more people.
And I appreciate you coming to the Christmas party. That whoever helped force you to go,
you.
That was incredible. No, it wasn't me. I didn't have that leverage. Somebody else had leverage over you, but that was awesome. And if I could tell that person thank you, that was awesome.
And that's the first Caviar Christmas party I've been to in a decade. It's been at least a decade since I've gone to a Caviar Christmas
party. So, see, I didn't have that leverage. That was somebody else that had leverage over you.
No, you had a lot. But we're going to in do more of those. And that's why we were at a small gathering last night and stuff.
Psychologically, why hadn't you done things over the last 10 years?
I guess I got withdrawn from disenchanted, divorce, let the business go, sold my airplane, and became a hobo. Literally. Mm-hmm. I mean, I considered myself homeless. Not in a negative way. I mean, I wasn't on the streets by any means, but I just didn't want to talk about it.
Became a recluse.
A recluse, mm-hmm. Yeah. And not that, I mean, I was fine and everything. It was all okay. But I stopped growing. I stopped expanding. I stopped looking for that, the brass ring. I stopped, trying to motivate others to work on others and doing that, with some exceptions. I continued to teach speech. I continued to help with the Miss Yuma County pageant. I mean, there were areas where I still... active. I still did the radio every day, but as far as my life outside the radio, it kind of came to a real slowdown.
So, what you're saying? Let's go back to New Year's resolutions. Everybody needs to grow. Everybody needs to kind of like a phoenix. That's my metaphor for everything in our office. Look, burn it to the ground. From the ashes, we'll be bigger, better, no matter what. Yeah. But like your recluseness, if you will, you didn't go out and do other things. Because you didn't feel comfortable doing it. Look, if you guys aren't comfortable calling me and asking credit and income questions and debt questions, just do it anyway, because there's no judging. It's like you when you went to your trainer the very first time. Did your trainer go, dude, Rush, you're fat, and then judge you?
No, he does now.
I would judge you now. But no, again, there's no judging. That person's sole job is to help you become more physically fit. They're not going to judge you, but the people who sometimes need it the most are the ones who don't go do it because they're the most scared of the judgment or they're recluse and pulling back
in. I'm becoming a big advocate that, age is just a number, and I want to prove it, more or less, that I can be as agile, be as whatever.
You want to go hike Telegraph?
I've already done that.
Okay. Over and over or just once?
I've just done it once in the last year, but proof of conception and all
that. Okay, well, that's proof of concept. Now we have to prove consistency.
Right. Telegraph is a half-hour drive now to get there. It's not as convenient, so I've been doing other things.
You don't work out for convenience. Come on.
No, but I could do a lot. I could do a lot of that kind of exercise without getting all the way to Telegraph.
That's
all right. But it is enjoyable.
Yeah.
I do enjoy it. And I'm very capable of Telegraph right now.
We have a ton of stuff to do this year. I'm excited to see what 2025 brings. And with Mortgage One growing, I want to thank the men and women of the military.
You're out of time right now. Right. We got to go. Say goodbye.
Bye, guys.
I'll be back.
At Yuma Investment Group Wealth Management, they believe they manage money for their clients differently from many other advisors in Yuma. Their way works in close alignment with their clients' goals. Yuma Investment Group is a fiduciary, obligated to put clients first. It's the highest standard for a financial advisor. When it comes to helping clients pursue a comfortable retirement, they're clearly different. Visit YumaInvestmentGroup.com and find out why investors switch to them. Investment advisory services offered through CWM LLC, an SEC-registered investment advisor.